I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are writer Jimmy Israel, columnist Ruben Navarrete, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, and Republican strategist Marcus Skelton. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey.
Doing good, man.
Doing great. Doing real great.
Well, you're doing better.
I know you are.
Yeah.
He's really cute, trying to like bring it in, trying to not to grin all over, like the grin spread all over his face. He's being very nice to us here.
You can definitely hear it in his voice because he knows that President Obama and the Democrats got served in Tuesday's elections. Now they lost the House of Representatives and barely hung on to the Senate. Michelle, give us a breakdown.
Well, Arsalan wishes us to remember that it is not unusual for the party of the president to lose congressional seats in midterm elections. That happened to Presidents George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and Ronald Reagan. But that being said, the loss of what's currently 60 seats in the House, with 10 races still undecided,
shellac is the right word, could be as many as 70.
And President Obama talked about working with a new Congress on his press conference on Wednesday. I'll just give you a short clip. Do you want to hear it, Justin? For those of you who missed it, here it is.
I think I've got to take direct responsibility for the fact that we have not made as much progress as we need to make. Now, moving forward, I think the question is going to be, can Democrats and Republicans sit down together and come up with a set of ideas that address those core concerns? I'm confident that we can.
Wow. So anyway, there you go, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. All right. Well, Marcus, you know, I guess the question is, now the Democrats are out in the House and running scared in the Senate, do communities of color really, really have something to fear from the new political reality? I mean, what's going to change for African Americans?
I think that nothing's going to change for African Americans. I think that's a great thing that the Democrats try to do, is try to say that we are the party that protects you from the man. But you realize over the past 2 years, the man has been a black dude from Chicago. So look, what's going to happen is we're going to actually look at where this money is going in a lot of these programs. That's one of the big things that people have seen. You spend all this money and we don't see it. And this is exactly what they're going to have to show over the next 2 years. Both sides, President Obama and the Republicans in Congress, are going to have to show where they cut the money and where it's all going.
But, you know, but here's the thing, Marcus, and it's one of the things that I'm interested in, is that a lot of Republicans ran explicitly saying that they want to undo health care, under health care reform. Well, who are the most underserved people in regard to health care? Blacks and Latinos. So why wouldn't they just rationally, based on, you know, just based on policy, not whether how you feel about this person or that person, say that the policies as stated by the Republican candidates are not in their best interest?
Well, I think one of the things, one of the misnomers of health care, is that everybody got free health care. What it is now everybody has to get it. We may give you financial assistance. One of the things is that some people may not have health care because they can't afford it currently. And this is why a lot of people on the more liberal side of the aisle were disappointed with the health care bill as well, because it didn't go as far as they wanted to have quality, affordable health care.
That's my point. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Ruben. I know you want to talk about this, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not a member, as you know, of the blue team or the red team, but I am in a
brown
good mood
team
this morning. I think, yeah. What can Brown do for you? That's what I need to know.
All right. I think this
is a great event, and I felt the same exact way, just cards on the table. In 2006, when Democrats took both houses of Congress, Republicans needed to be fired back then, in 2006. You had overspending, you had the Mark Foley scandal, you had lots of different reasons. Hubris had come into the Republican Party. And now you needed Democrats to likewise get a spanking. I'm all about taking static political stuff and inserting some element of chaos into it. Now, the blue team doesn't like hearing that. The red team doesn't like hearing that, because particularly in Washington, D.C., everybody's a cheerleader for one side or another. But I'm just calling balls and strikes, and I'm saying that it's a good thing that this happened, because the president had been moving too far, spending too much, and not listening enough either to the American people or to Republicans. The clip you played about he wants to work with Republicans, where was that in formulating the health care plan, where he basically said, we don't need a single Republican vote, not even Collins or Snow from Maine, okay, moderates like that. We're going to push this through on Democrats' votes alone. So now all of a sudden that he's gotten this shellacking, now he feels like he wants to compromise. Where was this spirit of compromise when we could have used it?
Uh-oh, A-Train, speak up A-Train for your homeboy, man. Come on, he couldn't even keep his Illinois seat, man. Well, you seriously?
Well, it wasn't his seat anymore.
You know, Jimmy.
Well, there's that.
You know, Jimmy, Gil Scott Heron once said that the revolution will not be televised. But what we did see on Tuesday, as my Facebook friends from Kentucky pointed out, was definitely a Rand slide. And, you know, what's interesting to me is, you know, obviously the Democrats, you know, thus far are going to retain a majority in the Senate. I think it's going to be 53-47 from the 59-41 that they previously held. But, you know, for those of us on the left, you know, we didn't really see them using that majority anyway. And so, you know, it's funny when President Obama talks about cooperation, you know, the conservatives and the Republicans, you know, point out, you know, all these little things. But when Republicans are in power, they never talk about cooperation. They march in lockstep with their party. They're a well-oiled machine when Bush and the Republicans are in power.
Yes, Speaker Denny Hastert, also Arsalan's homeboy, yeah. It has to be said. Talked about the majority of the majority. He said that.
What's different about that? I mean, I remember Obama differently. I remember Obama saying to John McCain during this health care. Remember, he got all the Republicans together in a room and he like beat on them, and they tried to go after him, but he beat on them and said, you know, you don't understand. I won the election. We had an election. The election's over.
Yeah, but
I mean, this
Let's rewrite the history.
But could we focus on here? I understand what you're saying.
Arsalan wants to paint out like all of a sudden Republicans never want to compromise and Democrats are all about compromise.
Here's the question, Ruben. Was this election about the process by which things got done, or was it about policy? Because one of the things I think is very strange about this press conference is that reporters are all beating up on Obama to say he was wrong on policy. Well, isn't that what he got elected to do? You know what I mean? It makes no sense to me. If his base, which is blacks and Latinos, didn't come out, not just blacks and Latinos and white progressives and white women, for example, did not come out for him, isn't that because they didn't feel that policies were really as exciting as they wanted to be? How then can it be that his problem was he didn't compromise with Republicans?
Well, and the funny thing is
that's my question.
The funny thing is that, you know, Republicans only, you know, tend to have a memory span, you know, going back 2 years. They don't remember, you know, this 8 years before then when we had George W. Bush, who never brought Democrats to the room, passed USA Patriot Act, domestic wiretapping, all these things without any sort of, you know, quote unquote cooperation. Again,
that's not true.
Not on domestic policy.
True.
That's not true.
Child left behind. On terrorism policy. I mean, if you want to believe, Arsalan, if you want to believe and your folks at the ACLU want to believe that Democrats did not sell you down the river on terrorism policy, you haven't been paying attention. I could cite 5 dozen Democrats who voted for the Patriot Act. Okay.
It was a 98-1 vote. Russ Feingold, who was sadly the only liberal line in the Senate left,
correct,
who lost his
correct.
Wisconsin
seat. So let's tell it right. Let's tell it like it really happened. I mean, this is always been in your camp.
Well, let's just, before we go, Ruben, so what's your argument? Is it policy or process that cost the president, the Democrats, the seats?
I think it was more process. I think it was more a sense that Obama was pushing things through, not listening and not really caring what the opposition said and not really caring what people were saying. When he passed through health care reform, despite the fact that, you know, 2/3 of Americans in some polls had problems with the mechanics of it, I think that was the seeds of destruction.
OK, Jimmy, what do you think before we move on?
I agree with Ruben. I think it was policy. I think people they don't want to be dictated to. They want to see some collegiality. You know what? I think you say what you want. You know, because here in Ohio, it was swept with red, but it was hardly a mandate, and voter turnout was down statewide. I think people just want Obama to listen. He's going to listen now, Jack.
To who is the question? That's my question. Because as far as the left is concerned, he wasn't listening to them. I'm just saying.
That's right.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from – we're listening to you. You're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the Barber Shop with Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, Arsalan Iftikhar, and Marcus Skelton. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Now, Barack Obama, he's not the only president with a story to run and tell. Now, George W. Bush's memoir called Decision Points is out next week. And in the book, he says that rapper Kanye West was responsible for one of the all-time low moments of his presidency, Michelle. Wow.
Does everybody remember this? Do you remember this?
Oh, absolutely.
You remember this? Okay, so you remember after the 2005, after Hurricane Katrina, Kanye West was a featured talent on this telethon to raise money for Katrina survivors, and he was appearing with Mike Myers, the actor, and Kanye went totally off the reservation, and here's a portion of it. Now, what you can't see is like Mike Myers' face
exactly.
Looking like he'd been run over by a Mack truck. Like, what has just happened here? But I'll just play the clip. Then you'll hear Kanye first, then Mike Myers, then Kanye again. Here it is.
Red Cross is doing everything they can. We already realize a lot of the people that could help are at war right now, fighting another way, and they've given them permission to go down and shoot us.
And subtle, but in even many ways more profoundly devastating, is the lasting damage to the survivors' will to rebuild and remain in the area. The destruction of the spirit of the people of southern Louisiana and Mississippi may end up being the most tragic loss of all.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
Well, wow. So then
I gotta say that was a little better than what came later, which was Beyonce had the best video of all time.
That was crazy. That was crazy. But then, of course, now today, as the worm turns, Kanye says he empathizes with President Bush. This is what he told a Houston radio host on Wednesday.
I definitely can understand the way he feels to be accused of being a racist in any way, because the same thing happened to me, you know, where I got accused of being racist. And with both situations, it was basically a lack of compassion that America saw.
That's kind of you talking about his Video Music Award diss of
his Taylor Swift moment. Right.
Thanks for that, Michelle. Now, I don't know, Marcus, so Kanye West comments, that was the worst thing to happen during President Bush's administration. Really, that was his low point.
I think it could be to him to ask him his personal question. If you look at some of the things that President Bush did do for the African-American community, it was all counteracted by one long-held belief that a lot of African-Americans have, is that Republicans are a racist party. And, of course, they used that throughout the campaign, and it helped win in 2008, if you think about it. But what it is...
But why wasn't
so Kanye West did that all by himself, right?
Why wasn't all those people dying in Hurricane Katrina his worst moment? I guess that's what I'm puzzled by.
And Kanye West said it. It was an emotional thing. President Bush didn't get there at the time that he thought he should have been there. But that doesn't mean that he was a racist person. And when you throw the term racism around, Kanye West got a dose of it to see when you just call someone a racist, what happens to you.
He didn't call him a racist, though. Saying you don't care about somebody, is that the same as calling them a racist? I don't remember hearing him say the R word.
It goes down that slope very quickly.
That noted philosopher and political analyst Kanye West.
Right.
I tell you what, more people listen to Kanye West than George Bush.
And I don't know why that is. I just can't tell you why that is. I know. I think that the reason that President Bush felt wounded by those comments was because, you know, there really are two different George Bushes. There's the Bush in Texas, coming out of Texas in his 1998 reelection campaign. He got 25% of the black vote, and he got almost 50% of the Hispanic vote. And when he went national, he had this whole idea of like a compassionate conservative. Now, he gets to Washington, and having to play that out nationally, it all comes unraveled. And that is not the Bush that most people got to know. But the people who knew him back in Texas and covered him back then, I think would attest to the fact that he has always prided himself on being sort of a kinder, gentler version of Republican to minority folks. And I think that this really wounded him. And you know, he can get over it, but this was not a small thing. I remember when he ran in 2000, he said that Congress, Republicans in Congress, shouldn't balance the budget on the backs of poor folks, and ended up in a fight with Tom DeLay over that, a member of his own party. So this compassionate conservative thing was real. I'm not all sure what happened when he got to Washington and he went national, but he really, I think, does pride himself on, I am not your daddy's Republican.
Arslan's playing his violin right here.
Yeah. hold on.
Go ahead, A-Train.
I got to give President Bush the Come On Man award here. I mean, seriously? Seriously, Kanye West was the low point of your presidency? How about the war in Iraq that was based on completely false premises?
Well, he thinks he was right.
He himself concedes that the intelligence that he got was false. I mean, this led to 4,000 of our own boys and girls being killed, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians. I mean, you know, but you're going to say that the worst point in your presidency was when a rapper called you out on national television?
Well, A-Train, lest we forget, wasn't Bush the guy that launched $1 billion plan to fight AIDS and malaria in Africa? This doesn't sound like a guy that dislikes black people to me.
But I think that what Arslan is talking about is getting dissed by a rapper. That's a bigger deal than all these other things that happened,
right,
even if you thought you were right to do them.
Now that you have hindsight, with the luxury of hindsight, you're going to take, you know, a pop culture, you know, sub moment and say that that's greater in gravity than, you know, all these, you know, global
events? The point I'm trying to make is that, you know, that point, this at that moment, his low point at that moment was kind of amplified. But this thing that he did, let's take the thing he did in Africa with the biggest dollars of aid. Now, that a lot of people don't know about. So but everybody knows about Kanye. And I felt him with that comment. You know, I mean, you don't want people to know about your lowest moment.
I'm going to say, interesting about this, when Bush, and I just remember this, when Bush sir went national, he appeared one time before the NAACP National Convention, one time, the first time he was president, the first opportunity.
It was 6 years
he one time, and he didn't do it after that, and he held the NAACP responsible for an ad that appeared that basically, you know, tried to use the James Byrd case in Texas, where the African-American who was a victim of a hate crime killed by racist white folks, and had used that and Bush's subsequent veto of a hate crimes bill in Texas in a way that Bush found very offensive. But I got to believe that whole fractured relationship between African-Americans and Bush, that was a complicated thing. That was not something that he wanted to happen. It went bad, but I don't think he pushed it bad. I don't think, like a lot of Republicans, there's a lot of white Republicans out there who intentionally antagonize black people because it helps them make points with white people. And there's a long list of folks like that. Jesse Helms, top of that list. Sure. That's not George Bush.
That's true. Marcus, have you ever met him?
George Bush?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
you know, I've been in rooms full of Republicans, and I'm not dead yet. So, you know, I always say the Republican Party isn't a racist party.
Well next time I don't think that's the standard. That's not the standard, coming out alive. I'm sorry. I didn't think that they had poisonous blow darts to throw at you. That's not the standard.
There's always a way to score political points to kind of up it.
I just want to know if he was nice to you.
Yeah, he was nice to me. I went to the White House.
Did you feel a connection? You know, there are some people who just you feel like you just can't relate to, and I'm just curious.
I mean, in the brief 2 seconds of handshake and hug, you know, he seemed like a nice guy, looked me in the eye and said hello.
Was that in your view that Kanye thing was the low point of his presidency from your standpoint?
Well, that's on him. He has to sleep with that at night, you know.
All right.
So certain things that get you upset personally, you know, in his life, Kanye West may be a big deal.
Okay, well, we'll have to leave it there. We'll have to leave it there. If he feels that way, that's cool. Marcus Skelton is a Republican strategist, and he's also grants program advisor for the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. He was here in our D.C. studio along with Arsalan Iftikhar, the founder of themuslimguy.com. He's also a legal fellow for the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding. And with us from San Diego, Ruben Navarrete, a columnist for the Washington Post Writers Group and CNN.com. And from Cleveland, Jimmy Israel, author of The Denzel Principle. He was with us from member station WCPN. Thank you all so much.
Peace.
Thank you.
Later.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.